Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
differences between Sunni, Shia and Ibadi Islam. And I don't know whether people sort of pick this up from time to time, but it's really getting into, I think I've picked out five different types of Islam. So the backstory we have to go back to 1986 or something like that. I had to do a prepared paper for officer selection. Reserve, militia, army, you know, the worst of your worst, junk troops, you know, they also need officers. And I got up there and I think it would have been possibly be even later than that. I'm just trying to think, because I'm just trying to remember what I've got a book out on Iran and Iraq. There was a war beginning to go over there at that stage, and this paper spoke about the Sunnis and the Shias and the differences between them all, and you know, the importance of it. And I did a paper on the relationship between Australia and Indonesia as a comparison between Iraq and Iraq and Iran, in terms of, you know, the size of armies and the size of countries and what was going on and type of Islam. I got to say the title of my talk, and then they said, oh, that's enough, because it was actually being marked by psychologists. And all I did is get to do my title. I didn't actually get to... The talk would have been crap anyway. But since then, I've sort of ears pricked up when people have sort of explained it, and I think a lot of people forget about it. And then trying to go through, you sort of work through, and I sort of work through Islam, trying to understand it, and found out some unusual things about the Black Stone in Mecca, in the centre of the cube, or Cuba, which everyone goes around in a particular cycle and wants to kiss, and all this type of stuff, and the hadith, and the various pillars of Islam, and going through here, and then reading a little bit about the prophet, etc. And you know that you're on thin ground if you say, oh, you know, what are you studying, mate? And I said, I'm studying this, and they go, you know, you're in hard ground there, because you're going to be encountering people, you know, saying, oh, you shouldn't do it, and stuff like that. But occasionally you come up with things with the Black Stone, and which is sort of compared to other... there's one a religion, I forget where it is where they have various gods with different animal heads. There was one where this person was coming around, they lost their head, and they put an elephant's head on instead, and there's elephants with the left and right pointing trunk, all this type of stuff. Now you're hearing the beautiful rain happening in Australia, and it's absolutely just gorgeous amount of rain. So we're just having bumper crops around here, ready for the Chinese to slap trade embargoes on us to do it. I don't quite... No, I think they have to be, Trump has to be rough for the domestic audience, I think China has to be rough for its domestic audience as well. I think that might be the story. So getting back onto that. So essentially there's Muhammad. Now, the interesting thing is that Muhammad got assassinated by being poisoned by a lamb. Yep, a sheep eventually killed Muhammad, and he ate this poisoned lamb, because Muhammad, a bit of a different tack compared to Jesus and the earlier prophets. This is a prophet with a big an attitude, and he had armies and were killing various things, and they took a Jewish village. The Jewish woman got upset, I think, because they killed his brother. So she said, "What do you like?" "I really like lamb." "Oh, here's this lamb. It's a poisoned lamb. You know, whatever it is." So Muhammad ate the lamb, got sick, knew he was going to die, and then in his greatness, he said, "Don't kill. You don't have to kill this woman. I forgive her. It's a great thing." But then, unfortunately, one of her relatives caused offence to one of the other Arabs, killed so-and-so, and there's this blood money process that where if so-and-so kills one of your clan, you can go off and pick up some Joe Bloggs. You know, Joe Bloggs might be minding their way in a shopping centre or doing something benign, but and they mightn't even understand the blood money process. So she got killed anyway for blood money. So it's sort of like this complex story. So you've got all these stories going along, and essentially you've got Islam trying to understand how Islam around this period of time expanded, because it was expanded not necessarily by prophets, people not proselytizing to the people. They would go and sell it as a package deal to the ruling classes, and they'd adopt it. So one wonders that it must have been pretty well tuned at the time to the ideas and thinking of the people. It would just flow in naturally, that they'd want to go here, and here's a policy document, you know, here's how it's done. It's a bit like Keynesian economics in the time when we believed in money supply and all that type of stuff. It seemed the obvious answer. So I remember when I was studying economics, we were just on the brink of coming through an age, probably through the 70s and 80s, where there was obvious answers, and economists would come up with answers, and we'd adopt them. And so perhaps that happened at the time with the Muslims. But essentially there's the I can't even pronounce them, the Karajites. And the Karajites occurred, they were extremists. So there was this horrible thing. There's the bad boys who stole the stone from B something in the island next to Qatar, not Burundi, but I can get the spelling of it in my head, lost it. So you've got the bad boys, you've got the Puritans, which will be like Calvinist equivalent of ultra-Orthodox Islamic people, who then... So you've got to understand it's a hugely militaristic society. The not militaristic, as in terms of Nazi militaristic, sort of militaristic as in terms of male-dominated blood money and swords and stuff like that. So much so that a lot of it was... Muhammad was leading various... how we did this in such a short time is beyond my comprehension. But he led armies about the place. He had... People had simple disputes about when they could beat the stuffing out of each other. Sort of like, what? And so this is why they had the... the sort of interpretation of when they could bash each other up and who they could kill and all that type of stuff. And so Muhammad had to invent what he thought was pretty rigorous schemes. So the scheme was the fighting couldn't start until you saw the first crescent of the moon. So the crescent moon is sort of like the bat light which goes up and says, you know, we need you, Gotham City. Because the calendars were all over the place at that time, you couldn't say, well, you can begin on a Tuesday, the 13th of July. And of course, you know, it would just all go over the place. The calendars were there, and people would say, oh, I got attacked. You know, hey, Muhammad, what's going on here? And it would turn out that it was sort of two interpretations of calendars. So you had the moon, and so a lot of the code of the Quran is given with a series of physical observations and mathematical equations, and therefore this really gave a shot in the arm to, if you wanted to run Islam as part of the scheme, you had to know maths and astronomy and all this type of stuff. It was sort of built in. It's always been built in. Sort of like you have the Passover. The moon's got a large thing to play. There's, you can hear the you've got this beautiful light fence above us, and the process of this is for me to actually do some podcasting. So whether you can hear it or not, it's a bit unfortunate. I'm a bit sad if there's a lot of noise coming over the top of this, so I'll try and speak a bit louder. I think I might just stop now because it's just too noisy. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.